Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I was doing great. And, well, great is a relative term. I had my backyard flooded today. We had like a minor mudslide going into my pool. So I spent half my morning. So I was still in, like, despite that, a relatively decent mood because I'm going to finish up work a little early today. And then we heard about their explanation for trading Zubats.
So
that's where we're going to start. We're going to start with that explanation. But I promised everybody that we were going to spend as much time as we possibly can having a little bit of fun to send you guys off into the All-Star weekend and just to any weekend in particular. So that's how today's show is going to go. I just put the article up for Silver Screen and Roll. My tweet for the article was, you know, kicking everything. I'm going to read the quote to you, Pete. This is from Brad Turner on the FNA podcast. It was his explanation of what went down as my computer proceeds to load really slowly. Here we go. So, quote, the Lakers kept thinking to themselves, quote, we won't be able to afford Zubats this summer. That can't happen. And the biggest key out of all of this is that they want Michael Beasley gone. He had to be moved on. Some of it was because of the interaction he had with Luke Walton after the Golden State game when he spoke out about what was going on and guys being selfish. He felt singled out. So based on that, knowing the Lakers knew going forward, if they're going to keep all the salary cap space, then we can't afford to keep Zoo. They love Zubats. They wanted to keep him around, but they couldn't afford to keep him on this team this summer. Also, a small thing was JaVale McGee started feeling some kind of way about not playing as much, about not starting. You had to weigh all of those things. In that explanation, can you find a decent reason for trading Zubats?
No. I would like to hear that. Not through Turner.
Yeah.
And Turner is obviously, you know, he's very close to Magic and he's a good gauge of where their head's at. Even as many concerns as I have about the Lakers front office, maybe this is just me being in denial. Zubats has a $1.9 million cap hold over this summer. So there being a concern about being able to pay him is not a well-founded one, right? Mm-hmm. At a $1.9 million cap hold, for an empty roster spot, you have a charge of, I think, $852,000. Mm-hmm. So Zoo is like an extra $1 million cap hold, and they'd have his bird rights. So if, say, the Lakers were to sign a second max guy, right, and it wasn't Kevin Durant, who's in the 10-plus max range. Mm-hmm. But if it was anybody other than Durant, the Lakers would be able to re-sign Zubats and go over the cap as a result of his very small cap hold in $1.9 million. He also, in the position he was in, was one of the few pieces the Lakers would have been able to sign and trade if they needed extra salary ballast for, say, an Anthony Davis trade. That isn't mentioned in the quote. Michael Beasley could have been released. There is no need to attach him to anybody else in order to get rid of him. And the Lakers started this year by not re-signing Lopez and not really pursuing him that hard. Now, we've spoken in the past that Lopez was maybe not all that interested in coming back, right? Mm-hmm. But they also released Thomas Bryant, who's shooting 38.3% from three, has a whopping 69.2% true shooting percentage, is killing it over in Washington. And then they traded Zubats so they just let those guys go. And then they traded Zubats for a big who can shoot, and then to get rid of a guy who they could have just cut, and then to placate JaVale McGee, who was being badly outplayed by Zubats. It's such a bad explanation that, like,
something had to be lost in translation.
Yeah, like I'd want to hear that from Palenka or Magic, or like I don't have a lot of faith in them. I also don't think they're not that dumb, are they? Is this just denial on my part? Like, because the explanation doesn't make sense. It, like, from a practical standpoint, in the short term, Zubats is the better player. They let go. They didn't address the, like, pick and pop abilities of and the outside shooting abilities of their five position early on in the year. And, like, they had to know they could just cut Beasley, right? Like, getting rid of Beasley is not, like, that doesn't even make sense.
I'm
yeah, man.
I'm right there with you. I hope that they, you know. So here's the thing with podcasts, right? With reporters on podcasts, is that when you write something, it goes through an editor. All the bases, you make sure that they get covered. When a reporter writes something, especially for a newspaper, all of those bases get covered. Whereas, like, when you're on a podcast, it's really easy to just forget something, right? It's really easy to just, you know, say something or try to explain something or do as much reporting that you possibly can and have it either not come out fully, have it misconstrued, what have you. It's like Brian Windhorst whines about it on every podcast that he goes on, right? And so I'm hoping that's what went on here with Turner. And this is, like you said, this isn't a knock on Turner. I am just as capable of messing up on a podcast as anybody.
Amen. Yes. Likewise.
So you know, maybe I'm hoping that's what it is right now. But if we're to take him at his word, and that is their explanation here, fire everybody. Like that's it's not that like trading Zubats and not getting enough for him or whatever is the reason why everybody should be fired. It's that this level of incompetence, if this is actually what we're dealing with, like have a cap guy around, man. All you have, like, just have. I thought Pelinka was the team's cap guy, where he could look at that and say, oh, 1.9 million isn't that big a deal come off season. And if it is, if it turns into that big a deal, well, then you just renounce Zubats in the summer.
Right. Like say Kevin Durant says, I do want to come to the Lakers, yeah. Right? Because he's the only guy that where the Zubats money would make a difference. Mm-hmm. If he says that, then hey, great. So awesome. We're renouncing Zoo becomes an unrestricted free agent as opposed to the restricted free agent that he is over this summer. And the Lakers renounce his rights and you go sign Kevin Durant, right?
Right.
Nobody's worse for the wear.
Right. And now look, that's that was my, if I'm to look at this optimistically, that's my takeaway here. Like if I'm to take this explanation at its word and I'm trying to find an optimistic angle to this, it's that they are still so cognizant of their edict to maintain as much flexibility this summer as they possibly can financially. Well, then that means they definitely haven't been told no by anybody. None of their intel that's coming in is telling them you are for sure out on all of the superstars, and therefore they're maintaining their cap flexibility. That's the only positive angle I can take from this.
But again, with the ability to renounce him,
yeah.
they don't gain anything right. by this over the course of the summer. Like right. the we can't pay Zubats, it's like then don't pay him this summer.
Fine,
right? Like then don't pay him, right? Like and who knows what he ends up commanding on the open market, but if it comes to that, but like there is no value added from simply letting him walk and getting an inferior player in Muscala, who theoretically the one thing that he provides is the thing that you neglected at the beginning of the season, which is the ability to shoot.
Right.
So even but the Pete, like
they need shooters because Lonzo was hurt.
I feel like a very clear picture is being painted in totality of the front office. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that like if the Lakers do sign a second max guy this summer, like they're still way ahead. They could have screwed up every single trade on the margins and not maximize their assets in a whole bunch of different places. Mm-hmm. But if you get LeBron James for free and then you get one of the max guys that's available this summer for free, at the end, you still come out way ahead.
Yeah.
So it's a matter to me. It's like, it's a charisma versus the ability to work around the margins, right? The understanding of the little things, right? And is the charisma and star power of the Lakers front office going to be able to attract a second guy? Because if you were to write it down on a list of like the things they've done well and then the things they've done poorly, it would be LeBron. I think the Cleveland trade they had last year where they traded Clarkson and Nance mm-hmm. and got a pick back and created cap space. I think that was probably a good deal mm-hmm. long run as well. It's probably those two things. And then a lot of things on the other side. But the fact of the matter is that like if you're rating those things on a scale of 1 to 10, like the Zubats screwing this up is like a 2 or a 3,
yeah,
and signing LeBron is a 10, right? Mm-hmm. So we can't act like it's like all of their small little mistakes, letting Thomas Bryant go for nothing, right? Like that adds up to LeBron, right? So that's kind of the irony of this is like I'm watching them make mistake after mistake, and they still have a chance for it to ultimately work out.
Here's my one, I'm agreeing with you mostly, but my one addition to what you're saying, though, or slight retort would be, if they do land that second star, that means they really have to work on the margins, right? Because now you don't have very much in terms of assets. If it's a trade, if they acquire Davis by trade, you don't have any cap space to be able to go out and sign the typical free agents. Now, players are going to be more interested in playing for a team that has LeBron and a superstar, mm-hmm. you know. So some of their job will be done for them, but you still do need to focus a little bit on the margins, and that they have blundered through the margins the way that they have still makes me nervous, even if they get Davis. Because, like, what we've learned this year is the Lakers did this big thing really, really well in landing LeBron. But what that's done is it's also highlighted the small things that they've kind of messed up on. If they go out and do another big thing really, really well in signing a max guy or trading for a max guy without giving up too much, well, then it's only going to make that noise even louder if they screw up the margins again. Because when you get those types of players, you owe it to those players, and you owe it almost to the league to make sure that you optimize the roster that you put around them.
That's absolutely the case. My comeback would be is that, say they were to sign Kyrie and then trade pretty much everybody, let's just say everybody for mm-hmm. argument's sake, who's left under contract for Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. And so your team is LeBron, Kyrie, and Anthony Davis, no more cap space, and you've got all these, you know, empty roster spots and whatnot. I would still argue, like, you're going to put together a championship team or a championship contender.
I hope so.
out of those other, right. And so, like,
isn't that what we said about LeBron? Like, if you get LeBron, then it doesn't really matter. You're going to put together a playoff contender or a playoff team beyond him, right?
Yes. That's a little different, though, than putting together like three of the top guys mm-hmm. in the NBA, right? And so I feel like they could, if they do that, you know, yeah. or if they, even if they're not able to trade for AD this summer, but they just sign a max guy, like, they can be bad around the margins. And, like, how much does it matter if you come away with that team with three stars and, like, nothing else, right? You're still in great shape. I would argue they have succeeded wildly if that's how the team looks at the end of this summer. I have my concerns that that's how it will go down. Mm-hmm. I have my concerns that the Pelicans will magically overnight change their philosophy of, we're not trading Anthony Davis to the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if Boston puts anything remotely respectable out there, they're going to take that rather than like, what's mm-hmm. their reason to change their point of view right. on that? Right. And so I have my concerns at their ability to execute it, but I've said from the beginning, from even the Russell trade, right? I was a big Russell guy, big believer in his talent and what he could be. But even at the time, it was like, hey, they've got this plan. They deserve the time to be able to execute that plan. And I think that the agreed upon timeline was these two summers, right? 2018, mm-hmm. 2019, to get to where they need to be. So I'm, you know, I think you can hear my concern and frustration seeping out a little bit, but at the end of the day, they do still deserve to be held to that timeline. And if they don't execute this summer, then I think it's totally right to bash them to whatever degree that we feel is necessary.
Yeah, I guess for me, when you acquire stars like that, expectations go up, right? Expectations go up, and then the higher expectations get, the more you can be let down. Like, this season is an example. The Dwight Mer season is an example where, if those other things that you do don't live up to, you know, filling out a roster decently, and you screw up a team that has a LeBron and a Kyrie and a Davis, then it's just all the louder. And sure. and what makes me nervous is stuff like this. And it's not like this is an isolated event either. Multiple stuff like this, screwing up on the margin so fervently, makes me nervous that you acquire those three guys, you screw up the roster beyond them, and the failures are only louder because I had higher expectations going into a season with those guys. Just don't let me down is what I'm saying.
I mean, that's good. That's the nature of sports, man. Like,
yeah.
the last, you know, since 2010, it especially has made me appreciate how spoiled I was as a kid. Like, it's not just like the on-court players, right? But like Jerry Buss was, if not the best owner in the NBA, he was right at the top. Jerry West, same thing. If he was not the best talent evaluator, not just in the NBA, but in sports, mm-hmm. right? He was close. He was in that conversation. Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, and then obviously going down to the players and Shaq and Kobe and Magic and Kareem, just all of the talent that they had. But like, they had the smartest dudes at every level, whether it was Magic or Kobe on the floor being two of the smartest players to ever mm-hmm. play the game, or in the front office as your coaches. And like, how many people in the Lakers organization in their current position are amongst the smartest people in the NBA at what they do? It's a short list. It's maybe Jesse Buss.
Yeah.
Maybe he's one of the more talented scouting.
Maybe Ryan West too.
Sure. And at this point, I'm not sure what Ryan West does.
Yeah, me neither. But I'm hoping.
Right. That's the thing, is that like,
but I know Polinka isn't that. I know Magic isn't that. I can at least hope that Jesse Buss is that. I can hope that Ryan West is that.
Right. Right. And whereas back in the day, we knew Jerry Buss was a bad dude.
Yeah.
Jerry West was a bad dude. Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, mm-hmm. all them guys. Right. So, in terms of like being let down or, and the expectation level, like, yeah, like once you put a team together like that, you have to operate well around the margins to some degree. I would just argue that if they're able to do all the big things well, they're like 90, 95% of the way there.
Yeah.
And that means a lot more than operating on the margin. So I'm trying to keep, and it's probably a little bit of denial, just being like, oh, Brad Turner, that's probably not what they actually said, right? You know,
I can hope. We can hope. This first segment went a little bit long. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back and have a quick second segment, and then we'll really open things up on the backside where we're going to have a little bit of fun. We've done a lot of doubting. All of last show was basically a big vent session for myself about the larger picture issues, but it's Valentine's Day right now. I'm hours away. We are both hours away from taking out our significant others who we vastly outkicked our coverage for. So I'm going to try to get in a good mood, and we are going to end this show and end this week on a high note. We're going to talk first about the All-Star game in general, and then we're going to talk about Lakers All-Star moments in the third segment and really have a little bit of fun here, lighten things up. So stick around. So it sounded to me, Pete, like you aren't really a big All-Star game guy, based on how we were talking before the show.
Yeah, man, there's something wrong with me where like I never got into like the like shoe culture, and it would always crack me up when my high school players, right? Like that was a big thing, right? Mm-hmm. What shoes you had, you know, what gear you were wearing, the All-Star, like all of like the side extra stuff, it's never really done it for me. But I do have some, you know, favorite All-Star moments of all time for sure.
I really, really get up for All-Star games. Well, the NBA one, the NFL one, whatever, the Pro Bowl sucks. Although I do really like the skills things that they do. Like I would happily watch instead of the Pro Bowl, a game of dodgeball between the best NFL players. Like that would be incredible. Like those that you know, I get up for these little. I've always been a big home run derby guy. You know, like Ken Griffey Jr. showing up to the home run derby with his hat backwards. I've always loved that stuff.
You know, when you extend it into All-Star weekend, to me, I enjoy Saturday a lot more than I enjoy the game. Right. Yeah. Like and it's cool to have like, it's a celebration of, to me, the greatest sport in the world.
Yeah.
And all of the culture that surrounds it. All-Star Saturday, for when you brought it up, I was just thinking about the All-Star game, which I think is generally kind of lame. But All-Star Saturday, I can get behind.
Adam was giving me a hard time about this, about the Friday night, the rookie sophomore game that they have. And my thing right now, you and I have talked about rule changes that we would make on a show way, way back in the day. But I think what the NBA should do, nobody really watches the rookie sophomore game anyway. They've tried to do this, you know, Team America versus Team World, you know, global thing. Eh, whatever. What I want them to do is, if there are any rules that they're considering that are like extreme rule changes, that's where to showcase them. So like a 4-point line on Friday night, I'm all for. Yes.
Yeah.
No charges, because nobody's looking to take a charge. So why, like, you shouldn't reward somebody for taking a charge in a glorified pickup game anyway. You
charges.
Like if there's a big one for me is like fouling in transition. If you foul somebody in transition, like in an all-star game, you should be kicked out of the league. Right? So this is where I think, you know, really liven things up. 3-point line, the 3-point competition on Saturday night. Like I think they should have it instead of like the money ball that's just a different colored ball. You should be allowed to shoot as many money balls as you want, but you have to take like 2 steps back. Like there's a spot where you have to shoot from even deeper.
Yeah, like have there be an additional rack from like 35 feet out, yeah. Right? So you can hit the bombs. Yeah, no, I love it.
It'd be so much fun. Slam dunk contest. Bring a trampoline in. Why not? Like just really, really let this thing go. I'm all for just being able to, like you said it perfectly, where you celebrate the game. This is, we're in agreement. This is the best game in the sport, in the world. These are, in my opinion, the best players ever playing the game right now. So really get out there and, like, for a slam dunk contest, put $5 million out there and say, superstars, have at it. You know, there's enough money for it and really have at it. I'm really looking forward to this weekend. Who do you think there's anybody from the Lakers who could take home some hardware here?
You know, when Kuz gets hot, he really gets hot. So, like, he's in the skills challenge, and I think that he could and along with the rookie sophomore game,
yeah,
he could definitely do that. And, you know, he's going to let it fly. I think he's got the best shot. How about you?
I could see LeBron winning All-Star MVP, and I think it'd be objectively hilarious.
Do you think he's going to go like all out?
Wouldn't it be great? Game? Well, isn't it funny that all
season? No, it wouldn't be great, because I'd like to see him go all out for the Lakers first at some point. Well, I would be pissed off if he dominates the All-Star game.
Look, man, I'm the guy who laughs on his way to the gallows. Huh? Yeah. But like but you know, if LeBron, cuz he spent all this year kind of reluctant to play the five, and he started doing it a little bit more recently. Guess where he's starting for the All-Star game? He's
matched on the team up against, he picked, right? Yeah.
He's guarding Joel Embiid to start the All-Star game.
Ain't nobody playing defense. Ain't nobody playing defense. He'll fit right in.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a really fun weekend. This, like I said, was going to be a shorter segment. When we come back, though, we're going to open it up a little bit, and we're going to talk about our favorite Lakers All-Star moments. And in listing them, there were a lot more than I thought there would be. Because, like you said, I only really kind of recently got into the All-Star game and stuff like that. For me, back then, the Lakers were vying for championships, so like that's all I really cared about. But in terms of when you actually list them out, there's some really good ones there. So when we come back, we're gonna get back and celebrate the Lakers a bit. This is the easiest take of all takes I've ever given, but the all-time, not just Lakers All-Star moment,
yeah,
but the all-time All-Star moment in American professional sports. I don't know about like cricket or anything like that, but in terms of American professional sports moments, you are not going to beat Magic Johnson coming back and winning All-Star MVP the way he did.
1992, man. Like, it's hard to give the full context to people who are a little bit younger, in that he was diagnosed, or at least it was announced in November of 1991, mm-hmm. that he had HIV and had to retire immediately. Lakers had just come off of a finals appearance in June where the Bulls won their first title. Michael Jordan won his first title against them. That was a relatively thin Lakers team, and Magic was incredible that season. It was Vlade was in his third year. You had Eldon Campbell, Sam Perkins, James Worthy was getting a little older, as was Byron Scott was still on that team, I believe. And But Magic really carried that team that did not have really a second superstar anymore, as Worthy's knees started to catch up with him a little bit. And one of the big holes on that team is that Magic was really the only shot creator. And we were really excited because Sadale Threet had been signed over the course of that offseason to back up Magic and absorb some of those responsibilities from him. And we felt, I remember we felt really good that he was going to be able to, you know, they were going to get back to there and get back to the finals and have a chance of winning. And in 91, with Magic announcing that he had HIV, it wasn't just like your title dreams being dashed. We thought he was going to die, you know? And honestly, like, it's such a gift to have him here all these years later and to be able to complain about his front office decisions without having to worry about his well-being, right? And it's just become something that we've forgotten about. But coming back, so he had been retired, right? And they made a special exemption for him to play in the 92 All-Star.
Karl Malone was angry about it because
Karl Malone, oh God.
Fuck that guy.
And he was great. He had been playing a little bit of like travel ball. He had put together a travel team that they played overseas so he could get back in shape a little bit. And then the end of the game, it was like him going one-on-one against everybody. And so Isaiah Thomas and Michael Jordan. And I remember they kind of ended the game like a little bit early. I want to say it was like 15, 20 seconds early because Magic hit that like sidestep three, like Harden style, right?
Yeah.
And like everyone just hugged him. And, you know, everyone was just like, it was just, yeah, like you said, man, everything that went into it, you'd be hard pressed to find a moment like that. That was just incredible.
There are very few, I mean, I'm a sap anyway, but if that game appears on, there was a really good documentary about it, and he was talking about it, and some of the other guys who were participating in the game were talking about it. He hits that three-pointer, I melt. I'm inconsolable for the next like 15 minutes because, like you said, we thought that guy was gone. He was he remains the brightest star, I think, in Los Angeles sports.
We called him the Dude Magic without even thinking that that's not his real name. Like he was so special, incredible that it was just like the perfect nickname for a guy. And it was just like such this bright star that felt like it was about to be snuffed out.
And we had seen. I mean, this was years prior. This was the decade prior, but we had seen like the effects that HIV and AIDS had on, like right now, the movie that might win Best Picture is about the singer for Queen,
Freddie Mercury.
Mercury, and we saw how that took him. You know, it's an ugly process that takes everything out of the person before it finally distinguishes their light. And we thought like this is how the brightest star in LA sports history was going to go, and for him to come back. And at that time, it was like, wow, look how valiant, you know, look at the strength that it takes to hold off death and have this moment. That was such an incredible moment. Like, you know, we're going to go through those lists here. But that, to me, is the not just all-star moments, period. But in terms of, like, moments in the history of sports, that's up there. It's hard to beat that one.
Yeah, and for all-star games, it's second to none in any sport, for my money. Like, there's nothing nowadays that's really comparable to what we thought of HIV and AIDS at the time and what we thought it meant for a person. So it's hard to really explain. But, yeah, it was like could you imagine in 2008, or something like that, Kobe being like, oh yeah, I'm gonna retire and I'm gonna die in the next year or year and a half. Right. You know, like that's what we thought at least, right? So that's the closest thing I can come to giving something comparable to what that was. And then that game was just so special as a way of being like, he's gonna be all right. And that's how it turned out to be.
Yeah. That's the best part about it, was that he did wind up turning out all right. The next one I have on my list, we'll see how you feel about it, but the Kobe MJ All-Star game. I have a picture of it. It's incredible to me. You saw them talking trash. There's a really good clip of their like back and forths throughout the game that the NBA put together.
Was that when Jordan was with the Wizards at that time?
I believe so. It was because remember I think that was the year that Mariah Carey sang to him too, and
right.
And that was like that was Let's see, if I remember this correctly, Kobe and Jordan were going like shot for shot down the stretch of that game. Uh-huh. And Jordan hit like a super high arcing fadeaway that everybody thought like, holy crap, that's incredible. This is how the game's going to end. And then Kobe came right down.
Yeah. It's like 2003. To the free throw line. 2003, yeah. Kobe was unbelievable. They didn't win the title that year,
yeah.
But that may have been his best year.
Yeah. It was outrageous. The stuff that those guys were doing going up against each other. And like, that was also at the time where like Kevin Garnett was really finding himself, and Shaq was like, yeah. You know, Shaq, and you had all these guys. It, to me, that's, you know, this era is giving it a run for its money, but that era where it was Shaq and KG and Dirk and T-Mac and Vince Duncan. Carter in his prime, Duncan, like that to me is some of the best basketball individually we've ever seen. And they all were there showing out. And it just so happened that the GOAT was participating in the game too.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yeah, no, that was unbelievable. And seeing those guys go back and forth and just like sharing that same type of mentality. You always see Jordan. Jordan speaks in pretty glowing terms of Kobe. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is because they're cut from similar cloth.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Is there anything, Shannon Brown slam dunk contest? Do we want to wax poetic about that?
Let ShannonDunk.com, baby.
So my wife and I have a tradition that every year Saturday. So I'm not really a big Valentine's Day guy, and she comes from a family that actually does really care deeply about Valentine's Day. Like her and her sister used to participate in her parents doing Valentine's Day. For me, it was just like, oh, yeah, I guess you guys, I'll watch the kids. You guys go out and get dinner, right? It was never really a big deal to me.
Sure.
So Jen and I met in the middle in terms of celebrating the holiday, whatever we want to call it. And instead of going out, like, you know, I'll take her to dinner tonight, but instead of like doing flowers and jewelry and all those things tonight, we actually have compromised and said All-Star Saturday night is what we're going to go out and celebrate every single year. We've been doing this now for 15 years. We've seen all of them. The first one that we were ever going to do was the Let Shannon Dunk year. and I can remember distinctly, like, Jen was pumped. I was pumped. Like, this dude could jump out of the gym. He could palm the ball so easily. It just looked like he had everything that you needed to do to win a slam dunk contest. And he attempted like a 360 from the free throw line, missed it, and then like was super conservative from that point on. Kept missing those too. And it was such like I'm surprised Jen and I made it, actually.
You made it through. What's the old saying, like bad wedding, great marriage, yeah. And vice versa or whatever. Right?
Bad slam dunk contest.
Yeah, he didn't put any thought into it. That was the impression that I came away with after watching that. Like, but he was, oh man, I love Shannon Brown. He's one of the great, like,
on the margins.
I don't know how to explain it, but I think you know what I mean. Like guys who weren't like, I'm not talking Shaq and Powell and Kobe, guys like mm-hmm. that. Right. But like role player, like who are the great role player Lakers of all time, or at least the guys that you really loved.
Yeah.
And Shannon Brown, man, that, we have the leftover of it where you see Kobe and the whole bench like watching the replay on the Jumbotron, right? Yeah. It's a great, great gif there. But that was, you know, the great block shot. Like that's one of the most insane plays I've ever seen on a basketball court. Block on Mario West, I believe it
awful
was.
Awful call.
Right, awful call. The ref didn't know what had just happened. I'm convinced of that. He was like, he must have fouled him. But Shannon Brown was great. It was too bad he didn't put too much thought, at least I don't think, into what he was going to do in the dunk contest.
He had, I thought, a series-changing dunk against the Nuggets where he dunked on Chris Anderson.
Uh-huh.
That really changed the direction of that series.
Yeah.
Kobe shut down the slam dunk contest for a bit.
That's right. After his rookie year, they didn't do the dunk contest again for a few years. I feel like it was two or three years. And then I think the famous Vince Carter one in 2000 was the first one back after that. I think they took 2 years off.
Mm-hmm. That was outrageous. I'm trying to think any more. Shaq and Kobe won co-MVPs, which was cool and all. It was great. I thought like the amount of like lovey-dubbiness around it was kind of contrived, but but it was still kind of cool to see those guys together and not trying to kill each other.
Yeah, you had those. You had, I think it was the 98 All-Star game. Lakers had four All-Stars. It was cool to see four. Then they got on the court at the same time. Mm-hmm. It was Van Exel, Eddie, Kobe, and Shaq.
Yeah.
And then Kobe got voted in his second year. So this would have been the 97-98 season.
Yeah.
And he was coming off of the bench for that year for the Lakers, but was really good, especially in the first half of the season. And he was great in the All-Star game. He really, you know, embraced that moment. So those are some of the ones that come to mind. I don't know if I'm forgetting something at least Lakers related, but those are the ones that really stand out to me.
Yeah, those were some of the good ones. I don't remember if Shaq was a Laker at this time, but he had that one moment where he was out in isolation dribbling the ball against like Garnett, I think, where he like kept going between the legs and stuff, and he did like this high step, high kick thing. That was kind of fun. I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm really looking forward to this All-Star game. It's going to be a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun. It was kind of fun to...
Yeah, man, I don't like complaining all the time. Me neither. Sucks. Like, I get Lakers, help me help you. Like, please give me some happy to work with.
Right.
And I will be happy to put that back out into the world.
Yeah, I had planned on this being our entire show today, but... Anywho, enjoy you guys' Valentine's Day. Enjoy your guys' weekend. I'll be back. Make sure you guys get your questions in for Sunday. I'll answer those in the form of a 5-star review. I'll answer those Sunday night and have that ready for you Monday. Have a great weekend. Have a great day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.